All right, we're back here on Talkin' Baseball alongside Bill Lasky and Marty Lurie. My name is Kerry Crowley, and as the Giants get set to take on the Dodgers, it's my pleasure to bring in our next guest, friend of the show from The Athletic. He covers the Dodgers, Fabian Ardaia, my fellow Arizona State Sun Devil. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Kerry. How's it going?
Doing quite well on our end. Looking forward to this afternoon's game between the Giants and the Dodgers here at Oracle Park. Dodgers' first visit to San Francisco, of course, since the NLDS, first playoff matchup ever between these two franchises. And so much has happened. We'll get into what went on this week, of course, with Max Muncy's home run against the Chicago White Sox, Tony La Russa's decision. But just going back to that NLDS, Fabian, I want to talk a little bit about how much these two teams took out of each other and whether the Dodgers really had a chance against the Atlanta Braves, because it felt like whoever was coming out of that NLDS was just going to be thoroughly exhausted. Didn't you get that sense?
Yeah, I mean, the Dodgers have pretty much admitted to it since. I know Dave Roberts sort of talked about it on record, just how much that series took out of them. Not just that series, but also the fact that these two teams were basically neck and neck from, what was it, like May on to finish off the season. Dodgers had to go through the one-game wild card. That really proved to be a gauntlet. And by the time that they were getting to Atlanta, they didn't realize how tired they were until after the CS ended, but like they realized they were gassed. Like that was a really competitive series, a really competitive race throughout. And I think you sort of saw how evenly matched they were, just with how, I don't want to say desperate, because desperate's not the right word, but like how urgent the Dodgers were with their decision making going into that game five, going with an opener for Julio Diaz. Like some of the different things that the Dodgers did that you wouldn't expect them to normally do in a DS that they had to do just to get past the Giants.
Yeah, and it really is amazing knowing that neither team ended up winning the World Series. Of course, the Atlanta Braves did, beating the Dodgers in that NLCS and then advancing to the World Series. But it is amazing to see what the teams did during the offseason. I mean, LA won 106 last year. The Giants won 107. Farhan maybe took his foot off the gas pedal a little bit compared to what Andrew Friedman did down in Los Angeles, going out and getting Freddie Freeman, trading right before opening day to replace Kenley Jansen with Craig Kimbrell in that bullpen. What was your first reaction to the Freddie Freeman move, knowing what kind of the implications would be around the infield for Los Angeles and, quite frankly, the luxury tax implications as well?
I think once you get past like the initial shock, I was like, oh, they actually like signed Freddie Freeman, something that sort of didn't seem like it was possible to get in the offseason. It made a lot of sense in terms of roster construction, because like obviously you had Max Muncy, who was able to slide over to second or third. He's been more at third this year when he's been healthy. You sort of could have used another left-handed bat after Corey Seager left. He's the type of guy who maybe diversifies what the lineup looks like in terms of he's able to use the whole field, a little bit more bat to ball than some of the guys in that lineup, and sort of changes things up a little bit. But and obviously, he's just an incredibly talented and consistent player. It made a lot of sense, but yeah, like obviously that's fighting a huge bullet to do so. I think it's knowing that the Dodgers, they sort of signaled this last year with the Trevor Bauer signing, that they're willing to sort of push that luxury tax boundary, because they recognize that this is their window within their window, because I don't know if we can ever say the window is ever closing for the Dodgers team, but like there's a significant window to really push in at this point. And I mean, they've been doing it. I mean, they did it, of course, this winter. They're sort of looking at, obviously, Trey Turner's going to be a free agent after the year. Clayton Kershaw's a free agent after the year. They have some big guys hitting free agency the year after that as well. So like, this is sort of their time to really push in, and Freeman's the type of guy that they're willing to take a six-year bet on.
Yeah, I love the way you describe that, the window within the window. I don't think I've heard that kind of perspective before, but it really does feel that way with the way the Dodgers go about their business, going on a decade now running near or at the top of the National League West. Fabian Ardaia, our friend from The Athletic, he covers Los Angeles Dodgers, joining us here on Talkin' Baseball Giants pregame show. And Fabian, now as you look at this Dodgers season, obviously they're in first place. They've been off to an incredible start from a record standpoint, but there have also been some hiccups along the way. If you guys got off to slow starts, what's been the most surprising element of this Dodgers season to date in your mind?
I think it comes with who is really carrying the load of the rotation at this point, because I think you look at the lineup, obviously, there's some guys who maybe are off to slower starts than expected, but the three guys at the top who are expected to really carry the lineup are the ones who have carried the lineup: Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Trey Turner. But the rotation, you're looking at, okay, the rotation's still one of the best ones in baseball, but the main guys sort of leading that have been Tony Gonsolin and Tyler Anderson at this point, who entered the season as their fifth and sixth starters. They were piggybacking games to start the season, all of a sudden those are two of the most consistent guys that they have. Anderson obviously coming off, I think it was like 28 consecutive scoreless innings until that was snapped this week. Tony Gonsolin leading the National League in ERA. Like, those are two guys who I don't know if Dodgers anticipated these types of step forward or anything like that. It's just what they've been able to do so. And you're looking at the rest of the rotation. Clayton Kershaw is just now coming off the injured list. Andrew Heaney's been on the injured list since April. Julio Urias has, and the numbers are good, but he hasn't quite looked as good as he did last year. And Walker Buehler, it's been a lot of concern about his fastball, a lot of concern about some of the production. I know he had given up 9 earned runs in the span of a week against the Pirates and Mets recently. Like, he has really struggled, and he was the guy who finished, obviously, in the top 5 in Cy Young voting last year. He's a guy who, opening day starter, probably potential game one starter once the playoffs roll around. They have to get him right. But the fact that they've been able to have this good of a rotation on the backs and shoulders of Gonsolin and Anderson has been a huge surprise.
Yeah, let's hone in on this a little bit. I want to ask you about Tyler Anderson specifically because he spent the truncated 2020 season with the San Francisco Giants, was notably ejected from a game during the final week of the regular season that didn't help the Giants' cause in terms of making the playoffs that year. They ended up finishing one game out. But what has clicked for him? He had this really long scoreless streak that obviously just ended this week. But what has enabled him to reach his potential? I mean, former first-round draft pick and finally living up to that with the Dodgers right now.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't really divulged a lot of like, specific details. He talked about like how he went back to an old changeup grip that has felt more comfortable for him. He's using it a little bit differently. He's using it a little bit more, using it in 2 strike counts a little bit more often because he's getting some swings and misses on it, which he wasn't in the past. Doing that and also just working with some of the Dodgers' game planning, pitch development, stuff like that. And also the Dodgers have played really good defense behind him. They've played really good defense, solid defense, all season long. I think you look at especially that outfield defense, it's hard to really find an outfield trio that can have as much range as Chris Taylor, Cody Bellinger, Mookie Betts have had. So that obviously is a boost to a pitcher like Anderson, who it seems like it's just been a good environment for him. He's made a couple of quick changes, and he's been close to a league average starter pretty much for his entire career entering this. So having this type of run, I don't know if it's necessarily expected, but I don't think it's super surprising just the fact of the resources the Dodgers were able to put into them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It feels like the Dodgers have been an organization, the Giants too of late, that really able to maximize talent from the players within that 40-man roster, guys who were kind of seen on the fringes of the 26-man roster. Maybe Tyler Anderson was one of those guys coming into the season, but certainly not at this juncture of the year for Los Angeles. A few more for Fabian Ardaia of The Athletic. And I know that there was some doubt, some uncertainty as to whether Clayton Kershaw was going to be back in a Dodgers uniform this season, given that he was a free agent last offseason. He makes his return on Sunday, Fabian, against the Giants at Oracle Park. 5 starts this season, 1.80 ERA, still doing it extraordinarily well at 34 years old. I have to ask, now that Buster Posey has retired, how long do you see Clayton Kershaw doing this for, and do you see him ever potentially pitching for an organization other than the Dodgers, knowing that he just signed a one-year deal with LA?
I think he sort of on multiple occasions brought this up. I think it's sort of a year-to-year thing for him, like for this point on in his career. I think it's a type of thing where he'll sort of sit down with his wife Ellen and his kids because they're at the age where they're in school now and they're still based out of Dallas. And like they'll discuss sort of obviously the sacrifices that have to be made for him being in Los Angeles, stuff like that. It'll be a year-to-year thing. He sort of looked at this year specifically as like a much better chance to win a World Series in Los Angeles than Texas. I think that's sort of borne out, obviously. And he's pitched very well. I think it's a case where it's just going to be that year-to-year thing. I mean, see how healthy he stays year to year. He had the back issue this year. He kind of alluded to the fact that it's probably going to be something he's just going to have to deal with the rest of his career, that his back's going to pop up once or twice a year, and he's trying to keep it till one time this year. But like that's going to be something that's a factor as well. Obviously, he was pretty close going to the Rangers, at least considering them during the winter. But I think those are the two franchises I could see him pitching for. I think it'll be Dodgers, or if he does leave the Dodgers eventually, it'll probably be in Texas to end his career.
It absolutely makes sense. And hey, one more for you before we let you go, because we saw just about everyone's reaction to this on social media earlier this week. I think it was Thursday when Tony La Russa, the Chicago White Sox manager, decided that in a 1-2 count, he was going to intentionally walk Trey Turner. And you look at Max Muncy's stats and you say, okay, he's not the same Max Muncy as before. But nevertheless, 2-strike count. You've got your pitcher ahead to Trey Turner. Just, what was your reaction and you know, the reaction to the fallout as well, La Russa defending the decision after Muncy ends up hitting a home run in that at-bat?
Surprise, obviously. I mean, just the fact that, like, I don't think it had ever been done before, where they've, at least since they've been able to track pitch counts, which I think is 1988, that where a guy had been intentionally walked after getting to a 1-2 count. Like, obviously, it's very surprising. You're in a situation where you're putting in your pitcher, not just in a position where you have more traffic on the bases with two outs, even though maybe you get a two-in advantage, but inherently you probably have to throw more pitches because you already have a guy at a 2-strike count as opposed to getting a fresh count. And it just obviously was very perplexing. The explanation afterwards was just as perplexing. He sort of doubled down on that. Didn't really recognize why it was a question. At least I think the comparable one, I guess, it's this year was when Joe Maddon intentionally walked Corey Seager with the bases loaded. At least, like, he understood, like, when you're going into that post-game press conference, you're going to get asked about that. And La Russa seemed shocked at that. I feel like he had sort of said, like, hey, I understand I'm going to get grilled for this. It didn't pan out. This is what I was thinking. At least in that sort of regard, like, you stand behind your call without pushing into question the judgment of the people who are asking you what you were thinking in that situation.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point. And we've now seen what has happened to Joe Maddon. It would not shock me if that happened to Tony La Russa, if that was the same outcome for him at some point of this season. Fabian Ardaya of The Athletic, he covers the Dodgers, does a great job. Thank you so much for joining us here on Talking Baseball. We always appreciate your time.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right, more coming up next. You're listening to Talking Baseball with Marty, Carrie, and Bill here on KBR 104.5 680, the sports leader.